Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Pei Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur 8 lines from the top of Daf Pei Dalet at the end of the line. Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source that will appear to be a bit obscure, and following the Tanaic source, which you can see is in a frame, it's a line and a word, following which the Gemara says, "My Ka'omar." The Gemara wants to know, what is this source really talking about? You will notice, after the source, a double line appears. This is one of our series markings. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh structural note, we feature the double underline, and we indicate these are Nisyonos, Lahasbir, Hamokor, Medrash, Kli Cheres, etc. We will attempt to explain this, what appears at first as a brief Tanaic source. So, as you skim down the Omid, you will notice Rav Zvid offers his explanation, and Rav Papa follows with his explanation of this source. So now the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Medrash Kli Cheres Tohor. Kli Cheres, an earthenware or a clay vessel. If it is a medrash, that means it's designed for resting upon, for leaning on. Nevertheless, it will not mekabel tumah. We will have to see later in the Gemara as to why that is the case, but that's what the source opens up with, that a clay vessel is not subject to Tumas Medrash. Rabbi Yossi Oimer Af Hasfina. Rabbi Yossi says, even a boat. As we said, this source is obscure. And the Gemara opens with the question, my Komar, what is it talking about? Rashi focuses the question on what is a boat doing in the source together with Medrash. A boat is Tohor even from Tumas Mago, even from contact with Tuma. And it is not something that is designed for reclining. It's not designed as a Medrash. Medrash is a reference to those type of vessels that are made specifically for sitting or reclining. Well, a boat is not that. So, what is going on? Omar Rav Zvid, Hochi Komas. Rav Zvid offers his explanation of the source. Medrash Kli Cheres Tohor. A clay vessel is not subject to Tumas Medrash. Umago Tome. However, if a Zav, who, by the way, is the one who could create Tumas Medrash. In other words, a Zav is a person that has a certain type of emission, and this results in his becoming Tomei. And if he were to lie on a regular type bed or a chair, he would make it into a Medrash, which means that the bed or the chair could then turn around and metama another person. The Zav would make a bed or a chair, something designed for sitting or reclining, he would make it into an Av Hatuma. However, if you're talking about a clay vessel, so a clay vessel does not become a Medrash. However, if the Zav were to touch the interior of the clay vessel, that's what this means, Mago'o Tome. If he touches the interior of the Kli Cheres will become Tome. Usfino Shel Cheres Temeo Kechananya. A boat made of clay will, upon contact, become Tomei as per the teaching of Hananya. Now, this reference to Hananya is a throwback to Daf Pei Gimel Omid Beis. On the lower part of the page, a Tanaic source appeared on the second wide line of the Gemara back on Pei Gimel Omid Beis, where Hananya said that the laws concerning a boat are learned from the laws featured in the Torah concerning a sack. And the nature of a sack is that it's movable, whether it's full or empty. Even if it's full, a sack that's full, you move it around. Now, those laws apply to all the materials listed in the pasuk together with sack. However, cheres is not listed together with sack. Therefore, the rule of a kli cheres, as far as Hananya is concerned, is that even if it's not something that one moves around when it is full, nevertheless, it is subject to becoming tome. So that's what the source says, that a Sfina Shecheres is subject to Tuma Kechananya, based on Hananya's teaching. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rav Zvid continues in his presentation, he says, Rabbi Yossi is saying, Af ha-Sfina Tahura Ketona Didan. Even a Sfina is Tohor, as per the teaching of our Tana. Our Tana is a reference to the Mishnah on Pei Gimel Omid Beis, where the Tana, the Mishnah, reported that a Sfina is Tor based on a Pasuk, Derech Oniyo Belev Yam. So that just like the Yam is, the sea is something that's Tor, so too any boat will be Tor. So far, we've read Rav Zvid's take on the source that opened up today's Gemara. Maskif law Rav Popa. Rav Popa challenges Rav Zvid and says, my af, according to Rav Zvid, he read Rav Yossi, in the original Rav Yossi said af hasvina, and according to Rav Zvid, the af hasvina should be, after all, Rav Zvid presented Rav Yossi as saying that even a svina is tohar. So that would be indicative of a response to the Tanakama, who had mentioned that there is some type of tahara in the realm of Tumas Mago, and Rabbi Yossi is adding to that. However, the problem is that we don't see in Rav Zvid's presentation any reference to tahara with regard to the realm of Tumas Mago, that's Tuma upon contact. So we don't see the Tanakama making any reference to Tahara, thereby justifying Rav Yossi adding the boat to the realm of Tahara. Elo Omar Rav Papa. Therefore, Rav Papa comes up with his approach to the original source. Hachi Komar, thusly, it is to be read. Medris Kli Cheres Tahar, Umago Tomei. The opening, by the way, is the same as Rav Zvid, that a Kli Cheres does not become a Medris. However, if the Zav were to touch the interior of the Kli Cheres, it would become Tomei. V'shel Eitz, a vessel made of wood, Bein Midroso, Bein Mago Tomei. A wooden vessel, though, if it's a vessel designed for reclining or sitting, or if the Zav touches it, so a wooden vessel will become Tomei. So that a wooden vessel is subject to Medris as well as Tumas Mago. Usfinas Hayardain Tahoro Kitana Didan. The Sfinas Hayardain, that's a small boat, and we learned about this back on Daf Pei Gimel. So a Sfinas Hayardain will not be Tomei. It is Tahor, based on Tana Didan, based on what the Mishnah said, Derech Oniyo Belev Yam. It's a boat is compared to the sea, and so to the Sfina Seyardin is compared to the sea, and therefore does not become Tomei. Rabbi Yossi Omer Af Hasfina Tomeo Kechananya. So Rabbi Yossi is adding that just like the Tanakama had mentioned that there is, when it comes to Kli Eitz, there is Tumas Mago that results in Tuma. The Tanakhama mentioned the boat is an exception, where the boat is Tahor. Rabbi Yossi says, no, even a boat is an example of Tumo, like Hananya. Namely, something that can be moved, Molei Varekon, like a sack, as the Pasuk says, sack. something like that that's moved mole v'rekon is subject to Kabbalah's Tumah. So Esfinas HaYarden is an example of that. And we learned that back on Pei Gimel, the Esfinas HaYarden was a small boat, was loaded up on, it was loaded up with its contents on dry land, and then brought to the water. So it's something that even when it's full, it is still transported, it's still moved around. So as such, it's subject to Kabbalah's Tumah, as per Hananya's teaching. Now the Gemara focuses on the issue of Medrash Kli Cheres. From where do we know that it is tar? That something that's made of clay does not is not subject to Tumas Medrash. So on the side of the Gemara, you'll notice we have a Nosei Mivne heading. The Gemara will feature triangles. The Gemara, that is, our marked Gemaras will feature triangles with colored in tips. These are Mekoros de Medrash Kli Cheres Tahor, sources that indicate that an earthenware or a clay vessel is exempt from or resists Tumas Medrash. So it's considered Tahor with regard to Tumas Medrash. So that even though a vessel, let us say, made of wood is, that's designed for sitting or reclining, and a zav were to recline on it, it will become an avatoma, which we call, it will become a medrash. Not so in the case of a kli cheres. So from where do we know that? That's the Gemara's question here. Medrash kli cheres minolan detor. From where do we know that a clay vessel is not subject to tumas medrash? Omar Chizkiel. Chizkiel, you'll notice, is with a triangle. He's the first of several sources that are brought by the Gemara to show this. Two of them are here, and the third you'll find on Amud Beis, about halfway down. Rava appears in a triangle at the beginning of the line over there. So in the meantime, we have Chizkia, Omar Chizkia, Dior Makro. The Pasuk says, V'ish asher yiga b'mishkavo. This Pasuk is talking about the Mishkav Hazav, which is the Medrash. So we are going to learn from this pasuk what becomes a medrash. Makish mishkavo lo. The pasuk says mishkavo. That means his mishkav. So the mishkav is compared to him, to the zav. Ma hu isle taro b'mikveh. Just like the zav is someone that can immerse himself in a body of water. Tosis points out that the mikveh expression here is lav dafka, because a zav really needs a be'er mayim chaim, needs a live spring, but the mikveh represents a body of water, without getting into specifics. So just like he, the zav, has tara in a body of water through immersion, af mishkav onami isle tara b'mikveh, so too the mishkav, that which will become tomei as a medrash, mishkav literally that which he reclines on, in order for it to become a medrash, as we said earlier, that's a bed that would then, upon contact with another person, make him tomei after a zav had reclined on the bed. So too, the bed must be something that can be immersed in a mikveh and thereby become tor. And this is to the exclusion of clay vessels. Clay vessels do not have tara in a mikveh, and therefore they are not subject to tumas medrash. Once again, just to go over the main point, the bed is compared to the zav. The zav is a person. We'll say he is an entity that has tara in a mikveh. So too, the bed, in order to become defined as a medrash, has to also be a material that has tara in a mikveh, which is not the case by clay cheres, earthenware or clay vessels. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, the Tanaic source from the Yeshiva Rabbi Shmuel, states, Kemishkav nidasa ye la. And this pasuk we see, Makish mishkava la. The mishkav, the bed, or the item designed for reclining, in order for it to become tomei, must be like her, like the nida, like the woman who is tomei. Mahi is lo taro b'mikveh, just like she has taro in a mikveh, as is well known, the nida, when she finishes her nida days, she immerses herself in a mikveh. Af mishkav anami is lo taro b'mikveh. So too, her mishkav, in order to be defined as a mishkav, must be something that has taro in a mikveh. Lafuke klicheres, to the exclusion of clay ware, the less lay taro b'mikveh. It doesn't have taro in a mikveh. Clayware has tara only through breaking it. In other words, if you have something that's made of cheres that became tomei, it doesn't lose its tumah other than by breaking the vessel, but it doesn't have tara in a mikveh. Therefore, clayware cannot become a medras. Mosiv Rav Ila. We have a question that begins here, and we have attached a long question marking to this section, and it will take you down a couple lines down the top of Omid Beis, where we have a source, and the source will present a problem for the analysis we've seen up till this point. So Rav Ila asks, Mapitz b'meis minayin. A mapitz is a mat made of reed material, a woven reed mat. From where do we know that it is mekabel tumas meis? Now, we must point out the reed mat falls into the general category of pshute kliyetz. Pshute kliyetz is flat wooden vessels. Flat wooden vessels do not become tomei. Here, we're talking about a mat. A mat is something that's basically designed for sitting or for reclining. So here, the source opens with a question asking, from where do we know that a mapitz, even though it is a pshute kliyetz, nevertheless, it can become tomei? Where do we know that from? V'din hu. So we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Logic will lead us in that direction. Uma pachin ketanim shitorim bezav tmei b'meis. Pachin ketanim are small earthenware vessels. They are tohor bezav. In other words, a zav cannot be metameit. First of all, as far as tumas medrash is concerned, they're not designed for sitting on. We're talking about flasks, small earthenware flasks. They're not designed for sitting on. There's no tumas mago because the only way for an earthenware vessel to become tumah is through tumah being in its interior, but its interior is accessed only through its opening, and its opening is very small, so it can't be accessed through its avir, through its interior. So there's no tumas mago. And there's no tumas hesed either, and that Rashi points out as to why that is the case. So pachim ketanim are tohor bezav, and yet tmein b'meis. That would mean if you have these small earthenware vessels in the same room as a corpse, the pachim ketanim will become tomei. So here we have an example of something that is tohor bezav, and yet tomei b'meis. Mapitz shetomei bezav. The mapitz, the reed mat, which can become tomei through a zav reclining on it, because it is something that is designed for shchiva, it's designed for reclining. It's a mat. So, enodin shiehe tomei b'meis. So here we have an example of something that does have tumas zav. Certainly, it will be subject, this mat will be subject to tumas meis. Now, You might want to ask Vamai, why are you saying that the mapitz has tumas zav, namely being that it's miyuchad l'shchiva, it's designed for reclining, therefore a zav by reclining on it can metamit, but ha lesle tara b'mikveh, it's not something that is subject to tara by being immersed. We pointed out earlier that the mapitz is a pshute kliyetz, and the dinim of mikveh were not stated by pshute kliyetz. The dinim of tara b'mikveh were stated by vessels that have an interior to them, as opposed to being flat wooden vessels. So we see here a problem for the explanations we were giving earlier. Here we see something that is subject to tumas medrash, even though it does not have tara b'mikveh. So, being that that's the case, we would go back to the clayware and say, granted, it doesn't have tara b'mikveh, but that doesn't mean it cannot be subject to tumas medrash. After all, we see here in the case of the mapitz, something that does become tomei medrash, even though it doesn't have tara b'mikveh. Omar le Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina answers, shiny hosam. The case of the mapitz is different. Hoyol v'ika b'mino. Since other kinds of wooden vessels do have tara b'mikveh, even though this specific kind of wooden vessel, this reed mat, doesn't have tahara b'mikvah. Nevertheless, that the fact that other wood vessels do have tahara b'mikvah is enough to enable the mappets to be mekabel tumas zav in the form of medris. The Gemara continues. Omar Lay, so Rav Elah, who just heard Rabbi Chanino's response, Rav Elah says back, Rachmono litzlan mehai daita. The heaven should save us from your opinion. In other words, Rav, just to go over the Masa Matan of the Gemara, we saw Rav Elah challenge the idea of medrus being associated with things that have tahara b'mikvah. So Rav Elah challenged that, and from the case of the Mappets, and Rav Chanina responded to Rav Elah's question by saying, you can't compare the Mappets to the case of the Kli Cheres. The Mappets is part of a family of material that has tahara b'mikvah. Therefore, even though this Mappet specifically, being it's a flat mat, doesn't have tahara b'mikvah, it nevertheless is a notch better than the Cheres. So Rav Elah, upon hearing Rav Chanino's response, says, whoa, he says, heaven forbid your logic, or God save us from your opinion. Adarabah, Rachmona litzlan, midaita didach. Well, to the contrary, the hesber that Rav Chanina gave is great, and heaven should save us from your objection. The Gemara continues, v'taimo mai. Here the Gemara wants to understand the reason or the basis, the source for saying that since we want a source for Rabbi Chanina's answer. That you are saying that since we're dealing with a material that has tahara b'mikvah, even though the specific case of the Mappets doesn't have tahara b'mikvah, nevertheless, that is reason enough for enabling the Mappets, the reed mat, to become a medrash. So what is the basis for that? The Gemara answers, Trei Kroi Ksivi. We find two psukim, and we will need to resolve the difference between these two psukim. Ksiv, on the one hand, it says, V'ish asher yigah b'mishkovo. In this pasuk, the zav is compared to his mishkov, to his bed. So there is a hekish between the zav and the bed. And if you recall, that ground that we said that just like the zav is something that has tahara b'mikvah, so too his bed must be something that has tahara b'mikvah before it can become a medras. Uksiv, on the other hand, there is a pasuk that says v'chol hamishkov asher yishkav olav hazav itma. Now in this pasuk, the bed mishkov is presented in a general form, not in a comparative form to the zav himself. It doesn't say mishkovo, it says mishkov, beds in general that a zav happens to recline on will become tamei. So in simpler terms, we have to make up our minds. Is the din of a mishkov compared to the zav or not? Ha ketzad, so how are we to resolve this? Answer, yesh b'mino, if you're dealing with a material that can a material that at other times has tahara b'mikveh, afagav the less lay tahara b'mikveh, even though the specific vessel that we are dealing with doesn't have tahara b'mikveh, it will nevertheless become a mishkov. That would be the case of the reed mat. The reed mat itself doesn't have tahara b'mikveh because it's a pshutei kli eitz. However, it's made of a material that if it had a base kibble, would have tahara in a mikveh. So that's the posuk that says we compare the zav to the mishkav. Ein b'mino, then makish. Well, let's go actually reverse ourselves, correct the detail correction. That in the case of yesh b'mino, so then we don't insist on the mishkav being compared to the person, to the zav. However, ein b'mino, if you're dealing with a type of material that doesn't have tahara mikvah, for example, clayware, makish mishkovo lo, then we compare the Mishkov to the Zav, namely, that just like the Zav is someone that has Tara B'Mikveh, so too, the bed will become a mattress only if it has Tara B'Mikveh. Cheres, on the other hand, is something that's not like the Zav, in so far as Cheres never has Tara B'Mikveh, therefore, it cannot become a mattress. Rava Omar, Medrash Kli Cheres Tahor Mehacha. Here the Gemara itself is kind enough. We accomplish this with our markings, but the Gemara spells out what we are looking for, namely that clay vessels cannot become a medrash. And Rava says Mehacha from the following pasuk: V'chol Kli Posuach Asher Ein Samid Posil Olav. The pasuk is talking about a clay vessel that does not have a seal, that is not sealed. It's ein asher ein summit puzzle of. So we say about a clay vessel like that, that it is subject to tumah. Rashi says, v'chol kli pasuch, kli cheres, ko'omar, sha'tumah nichneses lo derech pischali. Tumah enters its opening. Now, we can infer from this pasuk that the open kli cheres will become tumah. However, if the kli cheres featured in this pasuk has a seal on it, in other words, it's totally sealed, then it will not be subject to kabbalas tumah. Mi lo askinon diachdinu liishto nida. Are we not to suggest that this pasuk that speaks about the, or actually the inference from this pasuk that talks about a kli cheres sheyesh bo tzomet posil, does it not include even a clay vessel that was set aside for his wife to recline on, even while she is a nida? The kamar achmona tohor, and the Torah is saying, as we just inferred from this pasuk, that if it has a seal, if it's sealed, it will be tohor, and anything that's inside it will be preserved in a state of tahara. So from this pasuk we see that a kli cheres, which is the subject of the pasuk, even if it's been designated as a mishkav for his wife who's a nida, nevertheless, it will not mekabel tumah. We continue in the Gemara with a new topic, and under our Nose heading, we feature that we are going to talk about Kilayim. And this topic goes until Pei Vav Amid Aleph. Kilayim, in this particular context, is a question of agricultural or plant Kilayim. Kilayim is a very general expression that could refer to mixed breeding animals. It could refer to chatneys as well. It's linen and wool woven together in the form of a garment. Here we're going to be talking about plants. The Mishnah, Minayin la ruga shi shisha al shisha tvochim. From where do we know that a small plot of ground that measures 6 by 6 hand breadths, shizorin besocha chamisha zaronim, that you could actually plant 5 different varieties of vegetables and not be in violation of kilayim, of mixed breeding? And how would we plant the 5 varieties? Arba, al arba ruchos aruga, 4 different kinds of plants along the 4 edges of this plot. Ve'achas be'emtza, and smack in the middle, dead in the middle of this 6 by 6 tefach plot, a 5th variety. So each side has a different variety of vegetation. That accounts for 4 sides of this square plot. And smack in the middle, a 5th plant, 5th variety. So the Mishnah had opened with the question of from where do we know this? Shenemar, the Mishnah answers, Ki koretz totsi tzimcho uchigano zeru'eho tatzmiach. Zar'o lo nemar, it doesn't say in this pasuk zar'o, elo zeru'eho. The Gemara immediately asks, my mashma, how do you see from this pasuk the idea of having 5 different types of plant life, or 5 different types of vegetation in a plot of 6 by 6 tvachim? So the Gemara answers, Omer of Yehuda, ki ka'aretz totzi tzimcha, totsi equals chad. The word totsi accounts for one variety. Tzimcha equals chad. Hare tre. Tzimcha accounts for a second variety. So that's two so far. Two different types of vegetation. Zei ru'eha is a plural word. Tre, that accounts for another two. Ha arba. So far we're up to four plant varieties. And tatsmiach equals chad. That accounts for a fifth type of vegetation. Ha chamisha, giving us a total of five. The Gemara continues at the top of Pei Hei Omer Aleph. The kim luhu l'rabonon, and the rabonon know the chamisha b'shisa lo yanki mehadodi, that five different kinds of plants in a plot measuring 6 by 6 tvachim don't nurture from one another. Since they don't nurture from one another, they don't derive their sustenance together, we thereby avoid a problem of kilayim. Now, Rashi elaborates on this topic and mentions a basic point, a foundation point, is, and that is that kilayim, even though it's loosely translated as mixed breeding, it really is a, when it comes to plants, it's a situation where we want to have recognition. Something should be recognizable that different varieties of plants are not planted together, so that you could have things that are actually very close to one another, but they give the impression that they are two different varieties. Just by looking at the way they're planted, you can see that they are two different varieties. That would then prevent the Isser of Kilayim from setting in. So that when we look at the plants that are planted along the four sides of this square plot of land, that measuring 6 by 6 tvachim, they are coming together, practically touching each other. However, they're grown in different directions. So that across the top you have it going horizontally, if you will. If you were to assign sides to them as east and west, so the top and bottom rows are growing east-west direction, and the side rows are growing in a north-south direction. So that creates a clear distinction. So therefore, even though the edges of these two, of each one of these rows, are actually very close to one another, there is no problem. The problem arises concerning the plant that's in the middle. The plant that's in the middle needs to be distanced from the respective edges or sides a minimum of 3 tvachim. And the reason for that is that a plant derives its nutrition from a tefach and a half around it. So when you look at that middle plant, you have to allow for a distance between it and the next plant, which also derives its nutrition from a tefach and a half around it, so that in order for each plant to be isolated from the plants on the sides of this plot, you have to have 3 tvachim, including the plant itself, from the plants on the edge. The Gemara just said that kimlu l'rabbonan, the rabbonan know, they understand, that when you plant 5 varieties, the way we just finished describing it, in an area of 6 by 6, so they do not derive sustenance from one another, from the same spot. And once again, we're focusing on the middle plant, will not derive sustenance from the same spot that any of the plants growing along the sides are being sustained. The Gemara asks, "Uminolon deha de kimlu l'rabbonan milsahi." Rashi explains this. From where do we know that the Rabbonan have access or can know these agricultural facts? After all, you would assume that Chachomim are people that are engaged in textual Torah-type study. How do they know, or how is it possible for them to know different rules regarding Avodas HaAdama? The Gemara answers that there is a body of knowledge, a tradition of knowledge that humanity has concerning different aspects of plant growth. And the Rabbanan accessed that body of knowledge. And here the Gemara shows us the origin of that body of knowledge. Omar v'chiyo bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Mai dichtiv lo sasig gvul reacho asher govlu rishonim. That is a pasuk, which the theme behind this pasuk is: do not encroach on the borders of your friends. And we darshan gvul shegovlu rishonim loy sasig. The boundaries, as defined by the early ones, the rishonim, the earlier people, do not encroach. The Gemara will elaborate more on this. My govlu rishonim. What do you mean by the borders that were established by the early ones? Now, before we go further, let us just point out that the pasuk that said lo sasig gvul reacha, the Torah is basically exhorting an individual not to plant his plants right up to the border of his neighbor's field, because that will create a situation where I, who just planted the plant, am deriving nutrition for my plants from the soil of my neighbor. And that is something that the Torah is warning against. The question here is, what is that distance? So the Gemara continues and explains the phrase Govlu Rishonim. Omar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omar Rabbi Yonason, Tichtiv, Eile b'nei Seir HaChori Yoshvei Haaretz. This is a posuk from Sefer Bereishis, describing a people, b'nei Seir HaChori. So, and the posuk also says that live on the land. Otekuli Alma Yisroel Kia Ninu. When you read this posuk, it makes you think that the b'nei Seir live on the land, and everyone else lives up in the heavens. But is that so? So what does the pasuk mean when it says B'nei Seir HaChori Yoshvei Haaretz? What's the point? To tell me simply that they are earth dwellers, that's obvious, because everyone is an earth dweller. Hello, Shehoyu B'kiin B'yeshuva Shel Haaretz. Yoshvei Haaretz means they were expert in the settlement of the land. Gemara explains what we mean by settlement of the land. She'omrim, they used to say, Maloi Kona Ze Lezais. Kona is a measure of land. So they were able to specify different sections of land that were best fit for different types of plants. They would say, Malo Kona, as we said, Kona is a distance. So this distance, Kona is a distance measure for land. Malo Kona Ze Lezais, Malo Kona Ze Ligfanim, Malo Kona Ze Lezaisim. They would be able to say, they had this agricultural wisdom and knowledge that they could identify different parts, different sections of land as being best fit for different types of plants. This for the olives, this for the gefanim, for the vines, for the grapevines, and this for the figs. V'chori, the pasuk mentioned that Eile b'nei Seir HaChori. What does chori mean? Shemirichin, if you look at the word chori, you can see, if you switch the letters around just a bit, you get the word reach. Shemirichin, reach means to smell or a scent. Shemirichin es oretz, they were able to smell the land, and based on the smell, they could tell you what it is best fit for. V'chivi, it also mentions in the pasuk v'chivi. Why there is a people that occupied the land of Israel before the conquest of the land of Israel, known as the Chivi. The word Chivi is analyzed here. Omar of Papa, show you To'amin es ha'aretz k'chivya. They had the ability to taste the dirt, the land, the ground, and based on the taste of the ground, they could tell you what it is best fit for. Kechivya, and hence the term chivi, chivya is a serpent. We know that snakes crawl along the ground and they eat the dirt from which they derive their sustenance. So do these people, the chivi people, were able to eat the dirt, so to speak, taste the dirt, and tell you what it's best fit for. That's the first pshat in the chori. Number two, Rav Acho bar Yankiv Omar, chori, the term chori is shenasu b'nei chorin minich sehen. This is a totally different explanation, but it means that they became free from their land. What do we mean by that? They're becoming free from their land. Bnei Esav, the descendants of Esav, overtook the Hori people. And after Bnei Esav overtook them, or conquered them, so they lost their land. So they're considered as being freed from their lands, more accurately, dispossessed from their lands through Esav's conquest. So, as at the end of this Gemara, we notice that the term Eile Bnei Seir HaChori, Chori is either a reference to people that had the ability to smell the land and tell you what it's fit for, or it's a reference to the people that were dispossessed. But not to lose sight of the forest for the trees, pun intended, if you will, then that is that you see there is a certain agricultural wisdom that people had. And the Chachamim, as the Gemara had asked at the top of this page, from where do we know that the Chachamim have such knowledge as to what the required distances of one plant from another to create the necessary separation regarding their sustenance deriving in order to circumvent or obviate the kilayim problem? How do the Chachamim know these things? So we just learned in the Gemara that there is a body of knowledge that different peoples had regarding plant development, which types of ground are best fit for different types of plants, and included in that body of knowledge is this point of how far plants derive their sustenance with regard to distances of plants one from the other, which is a necessary piece of knowledge in order to know how to set up the plants so as to avoid their mix, their breeding or deriving sustenance from the same spot, one plant with the other. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.